Hi, welcome to today's webinar. It's part of the Kinexus Continuous Improvement webinar series. It's titled Lean from Theory to Practice, One City's and Library's Lean Story Abridged. I'm Mark Raven, a senior advisor with Kinexus. I'm your host and moderator today, and I'm really excited to have with us as our presenter, Elizabeth Chase. She is the Material Services Manager with the Frisco Public Library in Frisco, Texas. So welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. It's going to be a great session. If this is your first time attending one of our webinars, we are Kinexus. We are a software company who is passionate about our mission to help spread continuous improvement. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and who we serve, you can go to our main website at kinexus.com. And then finally, next, if you are a Kinexus customer, if you haven't already done so, I hope you will register for this year's Kinexicon User Conference. It's in just about a month in wonderful Austin, Texas. You can look at our website or Google Kinexicon or talk to somebody you interact with at Kinexus to learn more. And I hope you will come join us. So with that, let me introduce our webinar presenter today. I'm happy to say a friend of mine, Elizabeth Chase. She, again, is the Material Services Manager for the Frisco Public Library. Elizabeth has been kind enough to let me come and visit and see some of the great work that she's been involved in there. Elizabeth began her career with the City of Frisco in 2003. Before taking her current position, her roles at the library have included Adult Services Reference Librarian, Cataloger, and Senior Librarian. In the category of other duties as assigned, as it says in our job descriptions, right? Elizabeth is a member of the Frisco Lean Team Steering Committee, which develops and implements Lean certification for city employees. Her primary role is teaching a four-hour Lean fundamentals class to employees throughout the city and celebrating the improvements made as a result. So I'll add, she's not just a member. She is a passionate Lean facilitator and improver. And I think there's going to be a lot of great lessons for us, regardless of the industries that we're coming from and working in. So I'm excited about this. And with that, Elizabeth, thank you. I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mark. And thank you, everyone who's attending today. I'm honored to be sharing our Lean story, and I hope that it inspires one of your own. I assume that the audience today includes some Lean practitioners who don't know much about libraries and some librarians who don't know much about Lean. So I will try to define terms as I go. But if I miss one, please just ask in the chat and we'll swing back to it. Let me start with the term Lean. In Frisco, we define Lean as continuous improvement that delivers value to customers, eliminates waste, and develops people. To provide a setting for our story, let me show you where we were in 2013 when our Lean story began. We had moved into the George Purefoy Municipal Complex in 2006, and the library was housed on the left side of the building. The first, second, and fourth floors were open to the public, and our administration team shared the third floor with the city's engineering department. Depending on who you asked, we had between 38,000 and 50,000 square feet of library space. I don't know what you expected to hear from a librarian, but our Lean story starts with books. The first we encountered was The Goal by Eliyahu Goldratt, which introduces the theory of constraints, where the idea that no process is ever faster than its slowest step. Since we work in local government, the concept of constraints really resonated with us. We understand having constraints. We also came across the book Lean Library Management by John Huber. Huber translated Lean concepts into librarianship specifically, which made it very easy to apply them. Paul Aker's two-second Lean approach showed us how it was possible for everyone, and not just those who could be pulled into a Kaizen event or pulled in to work with a consultant to participate in making improvements. And finally, your book, Mark, Practicing Lean, emphasized the need to practice Lean skills. These concepts, getting everyone involved in making small improvements regularly to put Lean theory into practice, really synthesized to become foundational to our approach. We were fortunate that early in our Lean story, we were able to work with John Huber, from whom we learned and practiced some key Lean tools. Balloon diagrams, for instance, using those, we made lists of what our guests wanted out of a service that we offered, and also what staff wanted out of the processes they had to perform in order to offer those services. By using video, we learned that it's really easy to see things on video that you miss when watching someone do something live. And then, of course, it's very easy to go back and review details through a playback feature. With the first touch principle, that says that if you can do something the first time that you touch an object, you should do it then. This really encourages one-piece flow, which reduces cycle times for processes. And peak load management. From that, we learned that we want to do everything that we can to level our workload because peaks and valleys are so much harder to manage than a steady rate of work. Some peak loads are outside of our control, and every public librarian in the audience knows every day that the kids are out of school is a peak load day, and there is nothing we can do to control the school calendar. But we can work to make sure that we're not doing anything to exacerbate those peaks or to create peaks of our own. Many people are familiar with the 80-20 rule or Pareto's principle, but that reminds us to focus on things that will impact the 80%. At the Frisco Public Library, we often talk around this by saying that our staff should be managing the exceptions, the 20%. We want business as usual, the 80%, to run so smoothly that it basically takes care of itself. Flow charts describe and show each step in a process. And having teams work together to create them often surfaces a lot of variation in processes and helps work out the best practice as well as bringing clarity. And flow diagrams, finally. These create maps of how people and work move through a space, which surfaces a lot of transportation and motion waste. One constraint we face at the Frisco Public Library is that on an items per capita basis, our collection is too small for the population we serve. So we need our collection to turn, to check out and check back in frequently. One aspect we can control to make that happen is reshelving books as quickly as possible. Let's talk about everything going right in retail versus the library for a second. So if everything goes right in a retail business, that business acquires some sort of product, stocks it on their shelves, and sells it to a customer, and they never see that particular product again because the customer is delighted and the product was not defective. So it's a once and done. In a library, when everything goes right, the library acquires a product, say a book, stocks it on the shelves, shelves it, and a member comes in and checks it out. And 2 or 3 weeks later, that member returns the book to the library. The library has to reshelve it. Another member comes in and checks that book out. 2 or 3 weeks later, they return it. And that cycle repeats possibly up to 200 times until that item is literally physically worn to pieces. So one of the things that John Huber taught us is that small improvements in processes that happen repeatedly have an exponential impact. So the first process we examined with him was reshelving returns. And one of the most impactful Lean principles we learned from the experience was to reduce batch sizes to shorten lead times, or specifically for us, reshelving times. And I'm going to be honest here. This was not something that we learned in theory and immediately put into practice and made continual and steady improvements with. Our batch sizes would get smaller, and then we'd hit that peak load time, and they'd get larger, and then they'd gradually get smaller again until the next peak load hit, they'd get larger. But 10 years later, we're consistently shelving batch sizes of 1 or 2 shelves per small cart. Another key element in ensuring a short reshelving time has been keeping a visible scoreboard of whether we're reaching our daily reshelving goal. In the old building, we used simple technology, a whiteboard and colored dry erase markers. In our new building, we have huge screens mounted in the circulation workroom, and so we now update and display the data electronically. And of course, that leads to another book, The Four Disciplines of Execution. Using scoreboards, considering lead versus lag measures, and creating wildly important goals have all impacted how we think about and implement ideas. Once our contract with John was complete, we had to figure out how to continue practicing lean without an expert to guide us. A good consultant teaches you what you need to know and do when they're gone. The challenge is actually following through. When I teach 5S, I point out that the fifth S, sustain, is always the hardest step. I started out by sending a weekly email to library staff sharing more lean theory and tools. And honestly, that was probably the least effective thing we ever did. All theory using one-way communication, and that's even assuming the emails were read. What we really wanted was everyone on staff to be involved in practicing lean, not just in book learning. And that's simply not possible when you're working with a consultant or doing Kaizen event approaches, because only so many people can be in the room for those. So next, the management team agreed to support having each division in the library, and there are four: circulation, adult services, youth services, and the third floor of misfit employees, all the rest of us, complete and document 1 2-second lean type improvement each month. Each division had a specific week during which their improvement was due. So across the library, we were sharing one improvement a week. We did that for a while, maybe a year or so. In addition to practicing lean by making small improvements, the library staff became skilled at saving PowerPoints as videos because some of them didn't have speakers on their computers and most didn't like being on camera. But we required videos because we posted them to a YouTube channel we created. The YouTube channel is still up, though we haven't posted new content to it for years. You're welcome to find it and see the types of improvements we were making. So I'll just share one example. We started printing customized sticky notes. One set we place inside the cases for movies and audiobooks, and they make it easy for our members to let us know if a disc doesn't work. They just move the sticky note to the outside of the case before returning it. We then route the disc for cleaning. We have a machine that resurfaces discs before reshelving. Members are even offered the opportunity to write their library card number on the sticky note so that we can return the disc to them after it's repaired. The other set are for internal communication, a way for public services and circulation staff to let the material services team know why an item has been routed to them. This saves time on identifying the problem twice and creates a controlled vocabulary for problems. The next plot development for Lean in Frisco was Jeff Cheney's election to mayor in 2017. After his election, he asked each department director to report on what was happening in their department. Library Director Shelley Hawley included Lean in our list, which caught the mayor's attention because he has a background that includes Six Sigma. He announced that the library would extend lean training to all city departments. So Deputy City Manager Henry Hill quickly pulled together a lean steering committee, and the Frisco Lean team was born. We have tweaked the class content over the years based on feedback from those who have taken it, but we have maintained a focus on teaching broadly applicable core lean concepts, creating a shared vocabulary among city employees, and empowering employees to improve their own work processes. Just like with Peak Academy, to earn certification, employees must practice what they've learned by completing an improvement project within a month. Those improvements are shared at the monthly meetings of the Lean Club, open to all city employees, with a goal of sharing good ideas and providing an opportunity to network across city departments. In line with Paul Aker's 2-second lean approach, we encourage people to take on small projects to fix what bugs them at little to no cost. The goal is to practice what they've learned, even on a small scale. For example, at some point, our circulation staff started using first-in, first-out cards on the book carts to make sure that items got shelved in the order they were returned. A staff member named Juanita got tired of having to walk to a desk to get a dry erase marker each time she needed to fill one out. So her improvement was to use Velcro to attach a dry erase marker to each cart, eliminating wasted motion. Since we already used Velcro to attach the FIFO cards to the carts, we already had that tool readily available. Between the time we launched and COVID hit, we had made great progress in teaching Lean and having city employees practice what they'd learned. Almost half of all city employees had attended a bronze class, and almost 90% of those went on to complete a project and earn their bronze certification. The bronze level is foundational learning intended for applying to one's own work. Employees who earn their bronze are eligible to move on to a silver certification level, which involves a group of people working to improve a process in which they each have a part. Honestly, we've struggled to get the silver level up and running, but we have had one group in our engineering department earn their silver certification. We don't have anyone in the city whose full-time job is teaching, leading, or practicing Lean. We all do it as part of our other duties as assigned. On the one hand, that really does help make sure that Lean grows from within and spreads naturally among like-minded employees. On the other hand, it makes it hard to have time and resources needed to help Lean grow and mature. And then, in 2020, COVID. Our bronze class is very hands-on, and we felt it would significantly undercut the effectiveness to try to convert it to an online format. And frankly, we were all too busy trying to adapt our services to the new situation to do so. Granted, what we knew of Lean we were able to apply as our processes changed every time the state guidelines changed, but that was about it. And then other duties as assigned became a major plot twist. When the COVID vaccine rollout began, someone in the upper levels of city management thought it would be helpful for the city to set up and run a vaccine center. This project fell to the fire department and largely to Chief Jake Owen to implement. As you can see from the timeline, in literally 1 month, the fire department went from an idea to a fully operational vaccine hub located in an empty Sears store in the mall. I wasn't heavily involved with the planning, but participated in a visit to a vaccine site that was already running at a hospital, where we analyzed their processes to see what worked and what we could improve on. I know the fire department did a lot of research, in particular coordinating with city staff who plan events, because crowd management was a major component of an indoor vaccine facility. The day before we were to open, we learned that Toyota wanted to participate by sharing their expertise of the Toyota System Support Center, a nonprofit arm within Toyota that teaches the Toyota production system to government and nonprofit organizations. Let's be candid for a moment. Was the fire department thrilled that Toyota showed up at literally the last minute to help? No. Did they become receptive once TSSC demonstrated that they could gather and display data in ways that let the fire department make database decisions to improve operations? Yes. We all benefited from TSSC's previous experience improving processes in medical organizations. And because so many of the City of Frisco employees who worked at the site already have a foundation in Lean through the bronze class. I don't have time to go into the details of how we made improvements at the vaccine hub, and frankly, that's a different presentation that Jake, Anthony, and I gave at an AME conference a few years ago. But I'll say this. Once we worked through the processes and made some improvements, our door-to-door time was 18 minutes, and that included the 15-minute mandatory waiting time. And we didn't have any vaccine waste left at the end of the day. As a bonus, I got to fulfill an item on my bucket list and work with TSSC. As we reflected on our experience, a major takeaway from working the Vaccine Hub was that all it took to radically improve and exceed our goals was applying the basic Toyota production system techniques. You don't have to be an expert. You just have to put the basics into practice. We had a dedicated, invested workforce, but it was also a constantly changing hodgepodge workforce. Depending on the week, we had City of Frisco employees who were voluntold to report, hired temps, Frisco Independent School District employees, and or National Guard units. Each group had its own strengths and weaknesses, but overall they were hardworking and eager to improve processes. Especially in the first week, we could barely get through the morning training because the frontline staff had so many ideas that on how to improve that they wanted to share and implement immediately. The pictures are just one example. On the left is an FISD teacher who made and brought in a paper sign showing the barcode we needed patients to have ready to scan when they got to the vaccine station. We took her idea and added a picture of a driver's license as well, since we also needed patients to have their photo ID out and ready. Then we put the papers and plastics in sleeve protectors so they'd last longer and gave a copy to each of those working along the line. The idea improved communication by visually reinforcing verbal instructions, reducing our need to project through those masks, and helped us communicate with non-English speakers. It also helped that although we have different vocabularies, the City of Frisco and Toyota have the same underlying values, and in short order, we were able to speak each other's languages. Focusing on what we had in common, we emphasized our unity of purpose. And that unity of purpose behind our primary mission was key. We put aside our egos and built relationships to accomplish the mission. As Toyota teaches, humility is the number one trait of a leader. We also found that when you have a good process, the relationships are easier and better. The mission doesn't have to be saving lives. Every organization has a mission. Frisco Public Libraries is, we enrich lives by inspiring intellect, curiosity, and imagination. When the mission comes first and everyone focuses on improving processes to achieve it, that's when the magic happens. By April, vaccines had become widely available, so we closed the Vaccine Hub. And the next week, we had the wall breaking for the new Frisco Public Library building, which opened just shy of 2 years later on March 4th, 2023. With 158,000 square feet of space. Though, of course, work on the services and design of the new building date back to 2013, when we began the Growing City, Growing Library Master Plan, published in 2015. Because we were learning and practicing Lean the entire time we were working towards a plan for future library services, we were able to build Lean into our library design. One key element of Lean is flexibility, designing for the likelihood of change. So we put our service points and shelving on wheels. If our initial placement didn't match how our guests used the space, we would be able to move the service points. And as collection needs change over time, we can reposition the shelves. Of course, in this day and age, flexibility means power. We ensured that power was available everywhere guests can sit. The floors are even raised so that we can run power to any spot on the floor, which is also necessary because even our shelving is lit. This is a feature of the library that nearly everyone who visits notices. Because our ceiling is so high, we needed to make sure that there was enough light in the right place for our guests to see the books and read the spine labels on them. Lighting each shelf puts the light exactly where it's needed. And it's truly amazing what a difference it makes in bringing attention to the collection. Given that the number of checkouts exceeds every other service offering combined, it makes sense to highlight the collection. But it's beautiful as well as practical. Anyone who spends enough time with me will eventually hear me misquote William Morris to say, "Have nothing in your houses that you do not know to be useful, and believe to be beautiful. I think our shelving comes close to meeting that ideal. A second key element of lean is process thinking, considering discrete tasks as part of a larger process. We thought about the processes that needed to take place and tried to design the space to make those processes as efficient as possible. When I teach lean, I like to point out that the goal is not just to tidy up and unclutter, but to create a space that The goal is not just to tidy and unclutter with 5S. The goal is to create a space that's designed to ensure that processes there can succeed. We brought the same approach to collection layout in the new building. There were constraints that limited where our external book return could be, which in turn determined where our circulation department would had to be. But from there, we tried to locate the most popular collections, which have to be reshelved the most often, as close to circulation as possible to reduce transportation waste. But we also care about making processes easy for our guests. We knew we'd be opening a new building with no additional staff, so we needed our guests to easily find what they wanted with minimal staff intervention. So we spent the 18 months before the move reclassifying our collections, eliminating the Dewey Decimal System, and replacing it with a BISAC-based neighborhood system. For non-librarians in the audience, BISAC stands for Book Industry Standards and Communications. And they're the genre and subject headings that the publishing industry uses to describe what books are about. Borrowing heavily, as librarians do so well, from the AnyThink Libraries in Colorado's RangeView system and the Maricopa County Library System in Arizona, we created a word-based organization system for our collection. Our guests don't have to learn to convert business to 658.4. They can simply read the topper sign that says business and scan the shelf flags to locate subdivisions of the topic, like management. The system also simplifies sorting books for shelving. There are only three rules for staff or volunteers to learn. Everything is alphabetical. Nothing comes before something. That is, a blank line becomes before a line with text on it, and numerals before letters. We also eliminated all spaces and punctuation on our cutters. That's the last line in the call number for non-librarians. So there's no confusion about how to sort those. As we were making decisions, we always tried to keep questions like, how do our guests think about this? What will make things easier for our guests? What will make things easier for our staff in mind? And in the case of our staff, we'd get input directly from those who would be impacted. During this time, our adult services team was fortunate enough to work with TSSC from Toyota again. They partnered to improve the process for maintaining the equipment in our makerspace. Again, basic principles had a big impact. When we started, only a few staff knew how to clean and perform maintenance tasks on our makerspace equipment. The goal was to make it possible for everyone in the division and possibly some volunteers to do so. TSSC guided adult services in mapping the process, identifying ways to improve, and documenting the new best practice using a standard work instruction format. In the photo on the right, you can also see that equipment in the makerspace is thoroughly clean and clearly labeled with instructions for users Velcroed in place. In our previous building, we had exactly two study rooms. Now we have 15 study rooms, 4 conference rooms, 1 unconference room, and as of last week, one production studio. With 10 times the number of reservable spaces, we knew staff wouldn't have time to manage reservations. So we extended our use of software from Communico, which our members already use to reserve study rooms, to include providing codes, which members used to unlock the door during their reservation timeframe. Staff management of room access is now the exception rather than the rule. Speaking of reservable rooms, they all have glass walls. This was an intentional decision which allows staff to easily monitor activity in the rooms and intervene if our service policy is being violated. One of the first things that our director had to stop was someone lighting candles on cupcakes for a birthday celebration. No, we don't allow open flames in the library. When designing for both safety and clearing the building, we also took sight lines into account. We used 48-inch shelving for picture books and 60-inch shelving everywhere else. Keeping the shelves low improves visibility for the staff. And we try to align the shelves so that staff can easily see down the aisles from the service points. From the mezzanine, we have great visibility of the entire first floor of the library. When clearing the building at the end of the day, the public services and circulation staff work together with assigned tasks per division to clear the building from back wall to front doors, creating a human chain to prevent backtracking by guests. It usually takes between 3 and 10 minutes to clear the building at closing. A third basic but key element of Lean is creating flow, keeping work moving at a steady rate. A major technology investment that is crucial for us to get materials back on the shelves in 24 hours or less is our AMH, Automated Materials Handling Machine. With the move to the new building, we upgraded to a 31-bin sorter, which reads the RFID tags on our books and routes them to a bin based on home location, the collection in which the item is shelved. The circulation managers program the bin sorts to balance volume across the bins and group home locations that are adjacent on the floor. This pre-sort vastly reduces the amount of time needed to fine sort the carts and helps limit transportation waste when shelving. The doors between the public and staff areas of the building are designed to be hands-free for staff when exiting to shelve. When set to one way, the doors open from the staff side based on a proximity sensor, so staff just keep walking toward the door and they open. Believe it or not, based on a small time study, this technology investment saves the equivalent of a half-time employee a year. Since the doors slide open side to side, it's also a safety feature. We don't have to worry about the doors swinging open and hitting someone on the other side. To understand how amazing this drive-thru is, you have to know how terrible it was at our previous building. We had possibly the worst design drive-thru in the history of drive-thrus. There was one lane with two stops, a slot for returning books, and a service window for picking up holds. But they were so close together that a car at one completely blocked access to the other. And the city's utility bill drop-off was located under the service window. So three services in one car length. Then the height of both the service window and the book return required members to get out of their car to use them. And they weren't covered. From the inside, staff had to crank a pass-through open and closed, and it was so high that some had to stand on a stool to use it. As you can see, we addressed all those problems and more at the new building. On the outside, we have separate lanes for holds pickup and book returns. And except that a delivery truck going the wrong way took out the awning over the returns and it hasn't been replaced yet, both were covered. Inside, staff have a window to see if a line is forming in either lane, so we can quickly address that. And the fast food style window is both hands-free operation and at the right height for both staff and drivers. When it comes to Lean, it doesn't get more basic than the 8 wastes. Our new building allowed us to reduce those too. In the old building, each division was housed on a different floor, so each had its own collection of office supplies. When we moved, we placed all of the staff work areas adjacent to each other and created one office supply closet to house supplies that all divisions use. As a result, we've been able to use up a lot of excessive inventory that had been generated because one division didn't know what another already had on hand. The circulation department, who organized the closet for everyone, also leads the library in the use of Kanban cards. So we have a system for determining when and how much to order of needed supplies. As a result, we're also spending less on new supplies. In the move, we eliminated the use of paper marketing. No flyers, handouts, or posters for our programs or community events. Instead, we use large digital screens mounted throughout the library. Our software even lets us determine what slides show on what screens at what times. So we can target marketing based on location in the building, tech events outside the makerspace, or time of day, story time on story time mornings. Because the slides are similar in layout to web banners, it's easier for our graphics person to create marketing pieces for both applications using the same basic layout. During design, we spent a lot of time discussing how to ensure that staff would be able to communicate quickly and effectively across a 158,000 square foot building. Our director even identified some really cool Star Trek communicator type pins. Unfortunately, our budget is city government, not future age. So we decided on the tool that our circulation team was already using, walkie-talkies. We tested range and reliability, and now every service point, as well as circulation staff shelving on the floor, has a walkie-talkie. We have one channel for circulation, another for public services, a third for closing, which both CERC and public services use to coordinate, and a fourth to reach facility staff. Another guest-facing process that adult services worked to improve with TSSC was issuing new library cards. To ensure that guests become members with a minimum of waiting, they identified ways to standardize the work, creating a four-question conversation template that guides staff and guests through the process in the most efficient order to shorten the lead time and identify any potential difficulties. No one likes to wait, and the fact of the matter is, by the time someone is willing to ask for something, they already wanted it some time ago, so the clock doesn't really start at zero. The faster we can courteously get them what they need, the happier our guests are with the experience. Of course, our story isn't over. There are no end to the improvements we can continue to make. We've worked hard to practice lean into our organizational DNA, but we have to keep practicing to keep it there. In summary, I'd say that what I've learned so far is that consistently applying the basics of lean, or TPS, will get you further than expert-level learning that's inconsistently or never applied. So don't settle for theory, as wonderful as it is. Put theory into practice and learn from that. I know that was a pretty high-level overview given at a fairly rapid pace, so I'm happy to dive into details on any of it or answer other questions. And while you type those in, here are four more books that I highly recommend, but that I couldn't fit in today's presentation.
Okay. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. A lot of great, relatable, translatable examples and lean concepts there. Really fascinating story about the library and the bonus on the vaccination clinic. So encourage people, please. Continue using Q&A. There's a lot of thank you and great presentation comments coming through in the chat. But before we open up Q&A, let's do a few quick announcements. And Elizabeth, we'll give you a chance to drink more water. Thank you for powering through the allergies and doing a good job of managing that. All right, I want to tell you about our next webinar. It's going to be held on May 30th. Dr. William Harvey is going to be presenting. I've seen him give this talk at the AME conference last year, and I invited him to come do a webinar format. It's great. It's titled Enterprise Excellence is Inclusive Excellence. You'll be able to register for that at kinexus.com/webinars. You'll get an email when registration is open. I also invite you to check out our webinars on demand library, where the 100 plus webinars from past years are all available. They're all free, and you can find them again at kinexus.com/webinars. Next, I also want to invite you to visit our blog at blog.kinexus.com kinexus.com. There's a couple of great articles there every week, lots of new content. We invite you to come check that out. Again, free to all. We also have a podcast, the Kinexus Continuous Improvement Podcast. The audio from Elizabeth's session today will be part of that podcast. You may have caught the preview that Elizabeth and I did. There's a lot of great content. You can subscribe pretty much anywhere you listen to the podcast or learn more at kinexus.com/podcasts. And then the final thing is a pitch to please fill out the feedback survey form. Your feedback matters. We do look at these. We do share them with Elizabeth. We use your ideas to come up with ideas and topics for future webinars. And I learned a few months ago, making this request has improved our response rate. So please do continue filling out those surveys as you leave. And then with that, there's Elizabeth's email address if you have other things to reach out to her about. But let's go through some questions that have come in. Ready to go, Elizabeth?
Absolutely.
So we got a question here. How and what sort of tools or methods were used to help address or overcome resistance when implementing change? And I was going to ask you to share a little bit more about it. It sounded like there was quite a journey around getting more comfortable with trying small batch sizes. Could you tell us a little bit more about all of that?
Sure. We've never had a great deal of resistance, which has been very fortunate. So you, Mark, introduced me to Dean and Alan, Dean Schroener and Alan Robinson. And when they came to the city a while ago now, almost 2 years, and spent some time, they kept asking, why? What's Frisco is so different, you know? And we were trying to work out what is it about Frisco that Lean didn't have to overcome hurdles so much here. And our working theory, and I don't know how to prove it, is that because Frisco has been a fast growing city for so long, we were for like 20 years the fastest growing city in the United States based on census data. You know, we were seeing minimum 5-6% population growth every single year. And our working theory is that because of that environment, employees who were not interested in working hard and finding ways to improve processes didn't last very long. They got worn out and they went somewhere else pretty quickly. And so what we were left with were people who are already interested in improving. And what we were able to do with Lean was just give them a vocabulary and give them permission to do what they already wanted to do naturally. We gave them some tools, some concepts, some, you know, and said, go forth and practice on yourself. And that's part of, you know, why we've kept things on the small scale of the improvements too, is you can let people practice and not worry that they're going to create a huge disaster if they're doing small things. So both in the library and in the city, where innovation is very important. And so being able to innovate and change constantly, that's what the city is. So we haven't had to overcome huge hurdles in terms of resistance. Batch sizes specifically, part of that was just the number of carts that we had. Like, when you don't have any more book carts, you filled all the ones you have with one or two shelves, and now you have no more carts, but things are coming in. And we're talking, you know, in the current building, we see on average 2,700 people a day. Way higher than that on the weekends and then when school's out. And so part of it was not having enough carts to keep those batch, you know, to keep things moving. And part of it was, you know, what I always say is that when things get hard, when things get stressful, people revert. People go back to what was comfortable, even if they know intellectually it's not the most efficient way to do things. And so for us, you know, this batch says it's summer, it's spring break week. It's those times when the kids are out of school. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Frisco, it is a city of young families. Youth checkouts accounts for about 70% of our total circulation. Oh. And so it's largely physical items because that's what those kids are reading, not so much ebooks. And so part of it was not having enough carts to feel like they could manage to keep the batch size small. And I think part of it was just overcoming, you know, this is the way it's been done in the past and I'm stressed out. So I'm going to go back to what's comfortable.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like there's something also to be said for taking kind of a gradual approach. I mean, when people talk about an ideal of one piece flow, it doesn't sound like you had anyone fanatically saying, oh, one book at a time. Like that would be a huge right. leap. And we know would maybe even discredit lean mm-hmm. concepts if people were forced into something that was, for some of these reasons you pointed out, not practical in that current state. Right.
Yeah. And in fact, when we talk about trying to reduce batch sizes, you know, I say, I'm never going to advocate that, you know, one book gets returned and we grab it and we run out and shelve it. Like mm-hmm. that's not logical. It doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's finding that balance for what's as small that we can make the batch size that we're balancing the amount of walking that our staff have to do with getting that book out onto the floor for the guest who wants to check it out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. So another question that came in asking, did you track the number of improvements by employee and did you reward participation?
We never tracked by employee. You know, employees have to do the one improvement to earn their certification. If they take the bronze class, they have to do an improvement and that gets tracked. Other than that, we've never tracked beyond, you know, who's making the most. And we don't have any kind of rewards program either. I know that was something we read early on that Toyota, I guess, had tried it in a few places and then found that it was not the best approach. I know, you know, I always tell people lean is its own reward. And that's why I say, too, when I tell them at the end of the bronze class, I say, you know, you've got 1 month to do your improvement. I will send you one email reminder 2 weeks before it's due. And then that email reminder, I say, I'm not going to nag because I believe that doing lean is its own reward. And, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there's intrinsic motivation and mm-hmm. desires to try to tap into or unleash instead of thinking about how to incentivize what's sometimes been drummed out of people if they've been told in the past mm-hmm. to stop complaining, don't point out problems, don't try to change. Mm-hmm. We tap into what maybe used to be naturally occurring. And
mm-hmm. yeah, I don't, you know, I don't pay my kids for good grades either. I expect it.
Yeah. let's see how to sequence some of these questions here. I was going to ask about value, you know, and defining value. Mm-hmm. Imagine, you know, like in any setting, there's a risk of assuming we know what customers mm-hmm. want. And, you know, libraries have changed a lot. Like when I was a kid, it was books. And then I think like books on cassette, I'm dating myself, you know, but libraries have evolved. You mentioned makerspace and mm-hmm. ebooks and different items, wide range of items. How do you, you know, as needs evolve, make sure you're hearing the voice of the customer or getting that direct feedback of really confirming, like asking people in Frisco what they value instead of assuming?
We certainly did a lot of that with the master plan process. I mean, part of the master plan process was, you know, community forums and asking people for their feedback or what they wanted to see with the library. Honestly, a lot of times what they told us that we should be doing were things we already were doing, which told us we had a marketing problem. Mm. One of the things I tell the vendors that I work with a lot is like, I just say, look, if I'm being demanding, it's because I'm accurately representing my community. Our community has no problem telling us what they want. Mm-hmm. We accept, you know, requests, you know, if you're a member and there's a book that you want to read that we don't have in the collection, you have the option to submit a request for it. In fact, today I got an email from someone who had made a request for a book and then emailed to follow up to tell us which cover of the book they preferred, which was the first. But the demographics in Frisco are affluent, educated, and aspirational. And we definitely see that. And so our guests are generally very straightforward with us about what they want. And we do our best to respond to that given the resources that we have. And we do make adjustments to things sometimes. So figuring out what they want is not very hard, but we also do look at a lot of data. We're very data driven in terms of where is the circulation, where's the use for services. So we track all sorts of data, not just, you know, how fast do we get books back on the shelf, but everything we look at, we try to figure out how can we measure this and then leave some margin in the budget or resources for trying new things to see if there's something that we've missed, right? People can't check out books on a topic if we don't have any books on that topic. So you kind of set aside a discretionary amount of the funds for trying new things based on what you're seeing happen in the community.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So two questions that came in related to Paul Akers and his book and 2 Second Lean. So first question is pretty direct. Did you try to do the lean bathroom following Paul Akers' advice?
No. Library staff do not clean the bathroom here. We have dedicated facility staff. We love them. We treat them as part of our staff. They're invited to staff development days when we have food in for library staff. Of all facility staff who work the building are considered just part of the team. Mm-hmm. But we do definitely have segregated job descriptions in terms of, you know what, I'm in charge of managing collection and that's no one else's job. However, our staff break room, we do have, you know, it does get cleaned at night by the overnight cleaning crew, but staff there are expected to clean up after themselves and keep things tidy. It is not up to Paul Akers' level. I mean, that man and his staff break room is amazing, but we're not at that level. And nor do I expect to be expending my energy. There are other things that I would focus on before that, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And then the other question, do you have a morning meeting for the whole library?
No, we don't. Our library is open 75 hours a week. We are open Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Friday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So there are staff members I never see because they work nights and weekends and I work weekdays. So we do not have a morning room. We tried kind of some ideas on that a few times, but frankly, our staffing level is still pretty light for the amount of hours that we're open. We are, the city is more inclined to invest in labor-saving technology than in hiring more people, which is challenging at some points, but also beneficial in that, like during recessions, we've never had layoffs either. Because our staff is fairly minimal in terms of we don't have excessive numbers of staff. So we generally don't have enough people here at any one time to do things like that.
Okay. There's another question here. If you can talk more about approaches for getting buy-in from different stakeholders, how do you incorporate, you know, Toyota's respect for people principles?
Well, one of the city's core values. So the city has 5 core values, and maybe I just navigate to that slide because I've got it here. City has 5 core values, one of which is our employees. And for us, one of the benefits of the way that we define lean is that it immediately ties into the city's core values. So when we talk about developing people's problem-solving abilities, we're talking about the value that we place on employees in the city and the fact that we don't want them to be cogs in a machine, that we want them to use their creative problem-solving abilities and make those stronger. In terms of buy-in, I don't remember who. I've read so much about Lean over the years. I don't remember where this one came from. It might have been Brian Elms, although, you know, whether it was original to him, I don't know. But he turned, wherever I learned it, it turned me off the phrase buy-in and turned me onto the phrase invest, right? I don't want people to buy in. And this was the way it was explained. You buy into a poker game in the hopes of cashing out quickly, right? But you invest in something, you're in it for the long term. You know that it's not going to be a quick in and out. This is kind of something we're going to be doing long term. It's a long-term investment.
Yeah.
So I try to talk more about in terms of getting people invested in Lean. Various stakeholder levels. So when I started learning Lean and practicing in the Lean and library, I wasn't even in management. I was a senior librarian, which is a term that means you've been with the city. You've been a professional librarian for 10 yeah. years. That's yeah. what it means. So I've never been able to like influence people in terms of the authority that has been invested in me. I don't have any authority. So mostly it's been in personal influence or professional influence in terms of the benefits. For the library, one of those was that we were always short on resources. Mm-hmm. And Lean was the only way we could make things work. And it became really important to us to be able to innovate and to be a leader in librarianship. We had to be doing things efficiently. Mm-hmm. In the city, a lot of the getting investment from stakeholders is above my pay grade. Yeah. Deputy City Manager Henry Hill has managed a lot of that. And I do think we're fortunate in that the support has been at that level. So it's not really political, although it started with our mayor. It's not really tied to the mayor. So we don't have kind of you'll see in a lot of places where a politically elected figure comes in and starts a program. And as soon as they're out of office, you know, the other party dismantles it and goes a different direction. And so we focused more on getting department directors to be invested in giving us support and then teaching mid-level managers Lean and getting them to support it in their divisions, which is something that Shannon Coates, who's the director for our Parks and Rec department, brought with her from previous experience she had in another city. She's like, you need your department directors to give you the resources and the support to have time and whatever tools you need to get things done. But you really, your improvements are going to be made with mm-hmm. frontline and mid-level managers. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we focus a lot of our energy. Because, you know, once you find those people who are passionate about Lean, because it just ties into something that was already in them, you can't stop them. You teach mm-hmm. them and they're going to do it at their level, no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of improvements get made in government.
Yeah. John Huber is here and asked a question. So John is, of course,
author.
What's the title of the book again, Elizabeth?
Lean
Library Management. He asked, can you discuss the balance between self-service and attentive service in the new design?
So we've been somewhat self-service for a long time. We put in, you know, self-checkout stations when we were still in the George Pierfoy Municipal Complex, and actually in 2006 when we moved into that building. And I think what John's saying is there are transactional things that happen between staff, you know, between employees and guests in a building. And then there are more relational transactions that can happen. And so checking books out for someone, that's very transactional. But helping them identify the exact thing that they need to solve a problem, the book or the resource that's going to help them, that's more relational. And so we do try to make sure that our transactional interactions are as lean and efficient as possible and very self-directed on the part of the guest or the member, so that we have the time and the energy to focus on the things that cannot be automated that way. Whether it's, you know, the in-depth reference question or, you know, the reader's advisory and finding exactly the right thing, or just talking to the person who's there because, you know, they want some human interaction. Mm-hmm.
Well, we are about out of time. We have a couple questions that we may have to follow up with people on. I think we've run out of time. But Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing so many different insights and examples and ideas for people here today from the different things that you've been involved in there in Frisco. I appreciate the opportunity to come see the old library to come see what you're doing in the new space, and for the opportunity to come in and see what you were doing in the vaccine clinic. It's great to see these things firsthand. Thank you so much for bringing it to people here in the webinar presentation today. Really appreciate it.
Now, it's always my pleasure to talk about libraries and lean. So thank you for the invitation, and maybe you can find some AI that will improve the quality of my voice for all the recordings.
Yeah, your voice held up, and thank you everybody for attending, and we'll hopefully see you at future Connexus Continuous Improvement webinars. Thanks again.